Ron Ananian.
One of the things I always state that a good repair shop can do on an oil change is that ride, that minute ride, that spin around the block. They're looking for that problem, that small problem, before it becomes a bigger one.
The Car Doctor.
You know what BMW stands for, don't you?
No, I don't.
Bavarian money waster. And after owning one, you sort of understand that.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now,
I'm
the Car Doctor.
But I'm not going to take this anymore.
Here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Give us a call. Let's talk about your car and its problem, whatever you've got going on, fender to fender and door to door. That's what this radio show is about and has been for the past, 27, 28 years. It's just an ongoing process, just trying to learn about your car problem and trying to understand it so that I can give you the answer. That's what this radio show does and has done and will always continue to do. 855-560-9900. Give us a call. Let's talk about it. Let's get it solved. It's just going to be us basically standing in the corner of the shop and talking about your car. I was in the shop this week, and I want to go here real quick because the phones are already backed up. You know, part of what this radio show does is we try to make difficult simple, all right? And it's just that important because every problem can be whittled down to an understandable level. At least you know why you're changing the part. You should prove that. And that's what a good diagnosis is about. And you need to understand that and think about it. I chuckle when I still talk to people and phone calls and emails and conversations and, you know, they replace essentially $500, $600, $700, $1,000 worth of parts, and the problem isn't better. And I say, why did you pay for a diagnosis? And the answer I always get is, I didn't want to spend any money unnecessarily. you know, because the problem is, not everything is what it appears. And, you know, I've been saying this for a while now. The new sign in the shop is going to be everything is going to take longer than you think, and it's way more complicated than you can imagine. Because it is. It's a car. It's got a computer attached to it. It's got, you know, human thought process attached to it. Either the guy that designed it, built it, drove it, or broke it, or the guy who tried to fix it before you got to it. So you've got to really, you know, diagnose it. I don't care what you do. You've got to diagnose it each and every time. This 04 Volkswagen Golf was in the shop a couple weeks ago. We did a cooling system hose. It's this three-pronged hose that's over on the driver's side attached to the cylinder head. And you know, one of the disdains I have for Volkswagen is it's not just, you know, listen, it's easy to say things about Volkswagen and kind of chuckle because VW virtually worthless. We get that, all right? But, you know, part of that's the show, too. You know, my job is to kind of make you laugh, but you have to look at how the company backs up the product, and that's a lot of the frustration. We had to look up this cooling system hose. So, you know, to make the job harder, you talk to the dealer, and they say, well, it could be one of four hoses on that side of the car. You'd really have to give us better information. Well, I could send you a picture. Well, that won't help. You know, can you give us a number off the hose? And long story short, no, because the number had gone away. There was nothing discernible you could read. And I finally identified it and found it on my own. Put the hose on the car, bled the cooling system, shipped it, gone, done, down the road. Another one out the door. 2 weeks go by. Phone rings. Customer. Hey, you know, and those two words every mechanic hates to hear. Ever since. Of course. Ever since. Ever since we did the cooling system hose. And I'm not being fair to Bob. Bob was pretty good about it. He said, you know, he goes, I know it's easy to say and jump up and get in your grill about, you know, it's ever since you did, but I just got to start the conversation that way. Ever since we did the cooling system hose, the air conditioning hasn't worked. Okay. One thing I know in this business is you're obligated to check your work. I don't care what the customer has concern. And it's just something you have to do. We did exhaust on a Subaru this week, banged it out. I did it. It was, I mean, it came out perfect. I painted it. I polished it. Because I paint my exhaust. I don't want it to rust any faster than it has to. Shipped it down the road. Car was bone stock quiet. Next day I get a phone call. Hey, there's a lot of noise in the back of the car. Well, you know, and I'm scratching my head. And right away the mechanic's ego comes out. Oh, no, it couldn't be anything I did. Bring it by. They bring it by. Put it up in the air. I don't hear anything. The noise isn't there. You put it in gear, you hear a noise. The motor mount is so soft that when you put the car in drive and load it, it actually pushes the entire exhaust system backwards. And it's rubbing the mufflers against the bumper brace. So it's going to have to come back. We're going to have to do some motor mount work and you know, straighten out a few of the hangers and stuff. But it's there's always a reason why things happen. I was looking for it because the front pipe had snapped on this Subaru, and I didn't see it. Now I see it. And sometimes that happens. Back to the Volkswagen. So the Volkswagen became, ever since, well, we looked over everything. Now, to make this worse, if it could get any worse, it was a Canadian VW Golf diesel Volkswagen. Okay, so it was a TDI, you know, one of those polluter cars that we all have grown to love. And okay, so everything in this car is a little different. It's speedometers and the odometers and kilometers, and so you have to be extra careful. So you're going through, you go through data stream, and you're looking for, well, first I always print a wiring diagram. Well, how's the component work? Wiring diagram will tell me. I take the wiring diagram. Sensors that had complete access and input on, besides the obvious, was ambient air temp sense. Coolant temp came involved. There were three controllers involved in the operation of the air conditioning clutch. What made it work? What didn't? And then the fan controller module had complete authority. It decided, based on input, whether or not it would apply power to the clutch and turn the compressor on. So I went through. There was nothing unplugged. I looked at it as best I could on a scan tool. All the sensors were there. Ambient sensor was there. Coolant sensor was there. Everything, you know, had correct reading. One of the problems when you're diagnosing is if you don't understand how the circuit works, sometimes you can make it worse. All right? I used to have a technician. I love him to death. He's a very dear friend, Chris. We used to call him Smokey because back in the early days when we were working together, we always used to say if anybody could let the smoke out of a computer, it's Chris. His nickname was Smokey because it was, you know, charge. You know, teach him look before you leap. And he's actually a national trainer now. He's a very bright guy. It's big stuff. So you always want to look before you leap, right? So I did some research. Well, first I tested. I had 12 volts to the compressor clutch when I turned the AC on, and I had ground. Gee, why doesn't this work? It's you know, is it too easy to say that it's a bad compressor clutch? But then when I start the car up, the charging system voltage would go to 14 volts, but the voltage feeding the compressor clutch would stay at 12. And I'm thinking, why is there this 2-volt difference? It doesn't make any sense to me. Am I looking at a bias voltage? And if so, is it coming out of the cooling fan control module and it's not applying full voltage because it's seeing something it doesn't like? What makes this work? Research time. You know what they said about research, right? Einstein always said, you know, trust me, if you don't understand how something works, to paraphrase him, it was basically, if you don't understand how something works, do your research. It's not an embarrassment to tell somebody you got to do research. Trust me, I had to do mine. And, you know, look at Einstein. So I did some research, and I came up with the fact that the cooling fan control module is looking for a resistance value in order to apply voltage. Look how smart this thing is, right? But you never find this. You really got to dig into the minutiae of it. So it turns out the spec was somewhere around 4 to 6 ohms of resistance in order for the control module to decide, hey, it's safe to apply voltage so that I'm not going to do damage to myself and possibly some other component in the system. So yeah, I'm thinking this is a compressor, but you really kind of want to know, especially since, you know, ever since, you know, you're playing the ever since scenario. Thank God for big round headlights, all right, off the old school cars. They have a great, they draw about 6-7 amps. They're about 4.5 ohms resistance, right, across the low beam filament. And there's my load. Put the load into the circuit, and Danny would turn on the AC compressor clutch, and I'd watch the headlight come out under the hood. I actually shot a YouTube video of it. I'm going to put it up on YouTube, and I haven't done it yet. I haven't gotten around to it. But, you know, I proved that, hey, this is a compressor. Took a video of it. This is a compressor. It's a bad compressor. It's got nothing to do with the hose. It's got nothing to do with ever since. It's just unfortunate sense of timing that, you know, Monday it worked and Tuesday it didn't. And that's just the way it is. But it's the diagnosis that saved the day. And diagnosis is what this industry is about. Diagnosis saves me on many an occasion. It'll save you. Give me a call, 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get back and over and talk to Mick in Oregon, 03 Honda Accord. Mick, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Ron.
You're welcome, sir.
My son's got an 03 Honda Accord with the V6, and he pulled up in the driveway the other day, and he said, "Hey, Dad, my check engine light came on, and it was really running rough." So he popped the hood. The rubber boot that goes from the air inbox or the air box to the throttle body was all cracked, and it looked like it could really been sucking air. And I thought, well, that's probably our problem. So we put a new boot on it, and I mean, nothing has changed. It's still throwing misfire codes, and it's throwing a P1078 and a P1077. I guess that has something to do with the intake manifold runner control. I've done some diagnostic work, what I can do. I checked my scan tool. I was watching the short-term fuel trim. On bank one, it gets right up to 22%, and I'm assuming that's when it's setting the codes. Short-term fuel trim, bank two, it's around 7. Compression's good, vacuum's good, my fuel pressure's good.
Okay.
I kind of don't know what to
Mick,
do now.
Do you know, does this car have a mass airflow sensor? I can't remember 03 Honda Accord.
I think it does.
Well, if this has a mass airflow, I'm trying to remember what an 03 Accord V6 looks like. If this has a mass airflow, A, look for it on the scan tool, B, look for it under the hood. That's going to be part of the problem as far as fuel trim. Does it or doesn't it?
It looks like it does.
Okay. So right now you've got a fresh intake boot on. Did you clear codes?
Yes.
Okay. Codes come right back?
Yes.
Okay. So if that's the case, it's showing lean on one bank but not the other?
Correct.
Are there any misfire faults?
Yes. There's misfires 3, 4, 2, 5, and random.
Okay, so, you know, the easy thing is, or the easiest thought, which isn't going to be true in this case, is because it's common, they go through coils. I don't see where this car is going to start, you know, tearing up coils at that level. Usually it's one or two. So
right.
Let's solve the fuel trim problem first, all right? Be 100% certain this is a mass airflow car, all right?
Okay.
If it's not, all right, then it's a map sensor car. Map sensor Hondas are very fussy in that the slightest little bit of vacuum change will cause a change in fuel enrichment. All right. Example, I've had Hondas that the valves are actually out of adjustment just the least little bit, and it will cause a change of state in how the map sensor reacts to it, and cause a fuel trim condition to the point that it'll create a misfire and make the vehicle run rough, uneven.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So keep that in the back of your head. Do you have any propane or an alternate fuel source?
I do. I have some propane. I sniffed around a little bit. I couldn't get any fluctuation in the idle of the motor.
Oh, wait a minute. You had intake manifold runner control issue too, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So let's look at that. Let's focus on that. Now, sometimes with that, the vacuum hose leading to the IMRC rots away and breaks.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So why don't we go through an intake manifold runner control test, and that's going to be apply vacuum, look for change of state on a scan tool on the voltage. It's a 0 to 5 volt signal, if memory serves me correct. And it's going to be low voltage one way, high voltage the other. It's got to have an opposite end of the reaction, if you know what I'm saying. Let's look at the intake manifold runner control. Is the intake manifold runner control stuck? Is it stuck at midpoint, just mechanically stuck, which is the other thing that they do? Some of these certain model years was internal plastic, and they actually got stuck in the manifold, although most of those were the four cylinders, not the six.
Okay.
But let's look at, there's going to be a vacuum line leading up to the vacuum control for the intake manifold runner control. Let's make sure we've got correct manifold vacuum there.
I did do a vacuum test on the manifold, and it was good.
Okay. Well, and again, I'm not saying this is...
Right.
I'm not a big manifold vacuum test guy. You know, I got 16 inches. Great. Okay. You're proving it. You got 16 to 18 inches of manifold vacuum. You still got a lean fuel condition because the engine's able to put out enough manifold vacuum that it's able to produce correct within spec. You've still got a fuel trim problem.
So on this engine, it's like the intake plenum sits over the entire engine and over the fuel rail. And so when it was running, it sounds like there's a hissing noise coming from underneath that intake plenum. And I took a air hose, like a 3/8 air hose, and I fished it down there and held it up to my ear. And I can hear like a hissing noise under there. Obviously, I can't see under there, but I can hear it. And I don't know if that's just normal part of the engine operation or if there's some kind of leakage underneath there.
What do you have for fuel enrichment?
What do you mean?
Well,
the fuel trim.
Yeah, you got a bottle of propane.
Yeah, I got a bottle of propane, and I tried to get it down in there as best I could. I'll put a hose on it.
Well, yeah. So I'll have to come up with the part number. There's a tool from OTC. Have you heard me talk about this?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. And I'm telling you, it just makes life so much easier. You're going to get it and go, how'd you ever survive this without? All right. It's the old Chrysler Lean Burn Propane Enrichment Tool. Put a piece of steel brake line in the end of the hose. Peen the end of the brake line as tight as you want so it's a pinpoint spritz. And it's like having a laser beam shot of propane so you can direct it exactly where you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to work on cars, you know, there's just some basics you got to have. You got to have a spark tester. You got to have a scan tool. You got to have a voltmeter. You got to have a way to do propane enrichment. It just makes life so much simpler if we're trying to do this on the fly without, you know, getting too deep into it with expensive stuff to make it easier for a do-it-yourselfer. But I would do that and, you know, shoot it down under that intake plenum and watch. You know, and think of it like this. Take the propane now. Shoot propane down the throat of the air intake boot. Watch the
okay.
O2 sensor. Watch the fuel trim change.
Okay.
All right? You now know what it looks like,
to look
right?
For. Yeah, right. I know what to look for.
You know what to look for. Now shoot it under the intake plenum when you get the proper plumbing, if I can say it like that, and you'll know what to look for. And it'll just, at least it'll give you a direction. I think you've got a vacuum leak somewhere. I think something has rotted, broken, cracked. That's just hard to see. And propane enrichment is going to be the next step under that intake plenum to verify it. And then, you know, then you'll know, and then we can go on looking from there. I'm here next week if you need me. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Keep me posted. Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor. Let's go over to Mike in Delaware, 01 Chevy 3500, and some problems in the way the brake booster's working. Mike, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Okay. Let's see. The power steering pump is leaking. I replaced the hoses.
Okay.
And
this is a hydro boost system, correct, Mike?
That's correct.
Okay. Take a breath. Hey, Mike, take a breath. I think you're a little nervous. It's okay,
yes.
Brother. It's just,
yes.
Listen, nobody really listens to this radio show. It's just you and me. Okay? There's nobody else here right now. All right? So, go ahead. Talk to me. Tell me what's going on.
Well, I'm dumping power steering fluid in every day. Like, every 20 miles, I got to put fluid in it.
Okay.
I can get around it.
That's a pretty good leak, brother. So,
yes.
One of two things, either I'm going to have to buy future stock in the power steering fluid company you're using so I can retire, or we're going to have to fix the leak. So I'd rather fix the leak because that's really what I'm supposed to do. So
that's correct.
You know, is this leak obvious, or is this just like, you know, put your head up against the TV and glory be your heel that just kind of disappears by magic? Is it one of those?
Well, it looks like it's coming from three places.
Okay.
Up by where the snowplow mounts, like underneath where the, I guess where
the master cylinder mounts. Is it leaking from the area?
One leaking from there, from the master cylinder.
Right.
So it must be a seal in there.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And then I can't tell you where it's leaking from the pump itself.
Okay.
But I replaced the hoses, and the hoses aren't leaking.
All right. So, you know, is this a higher mileage truck?
Yeah, it's got the 220 on it.
Right. So, can I ask you, I'm going to ask a silly question. Mark it down. It's going to be a moment in history. Okay. Why can't this be a leak from the HydroBoost unit and the power steering pump?
Yes, it can.
Okay.
So I would imagine it is.
Right. So your question to me is what?
How much?
Oh, well, you know, first of all, the real question is not how much, but can you still get good quality parts? All right. And that's really the whole conversation. So,
well, I don't know.
Yeah. And that's, you know what? And I would tell you, I think you're looking for, let me see, it's been a while since I did a HydroBoost unit of that generation, but the last one I did, if I remember right, was, and remember, we're on radio, so no swearing, but I think they were $1,200, $1,500, something like that, just for the HydroBoost.
Okay.
And then the power steering.
I brought it to the Chevy dealer 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And what happened was the pitman arm broke on it.
Okay.
Here's a story. Right before the pitman arm broke, I was on the turnpike coming back to Delaware doing, you know, a little over the speed limit.
A little.
And I was in a parking lot, and I put it in reverse, and the pitman arm broke.
So
I had it towed to the dealer.
Right.
And I told him to fix it.
Right.
And the dealer wouldn't even touch the power steering and the brake stuff.
What? Okay.
I would like to keep. I don't know why.
Well, did you ask him?
He wouldn't tell me. So what I'm going to do is go back to the dealer and talk to the owner of the dealer.
Right.
See why they did that.
Now, and understand, you know, that price on the HydroBoost unit, it's been a while since I looked it up. One thing I always tell everybody is one thing I can't answer and be accurate is parts pricing. It's just, you know, it's not something I keep in my head. I can tell you what I remember paying for the job, but that job could have been 5 years ago in the world. The world's changed a little bit in five years,
okay.
Never mind 5 days.
So,
but you're,
how about the pump itself?
Yeah, a good power steering pump's probably $300-$400. You're probably, I bet you that's a $3,000 job by the time you're done. You know, but you can't.
Okay, how about the air conditioner compressor?
Well, so we're going to play parts pricing. So let's see, an AC compressor is probably another. And AC stuff is never cheap. I got to think an AC compressor is $500-$600.
Okay.
So why don't we do this?
The brakes.
Hey, Mike.
Here's another question.
Wait. Time. Let me talk a minute. Why don't we do this? Why don't we ask the dealer? Have you been going to this dealer for a while, or is this your first time there?
No, this is like the second time I went there.
Okay. What happened to your last mechanic?
I'm it, basically.
Okay. So why don't we...
It's a little bit too big of a job for me to do.
Instead of nickel and dime in this, and we're going to do some of this and some of that, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, why don't we tell the dealer, look, I'm willing to pay you for, I don't know, pick a number, an hour of shop time. Can you look the truck over and tell me what kind of shape it's in and what you think it needs? And then give me some pricing. Give me some estimates. Maybe that's why they don't want to do the power steering, because there's so much involved. You know, maybe it's in such rough shape that they're afraid to touch part A because they know part B is going to fall off next, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to have an ever since moment. All right?
All right.
So why don't
I use the truck for snow plowing?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And,
well,
I'd like to keep it because winter's coming.
Well, and you know what? Snow plowing, nothing beats the heck out of a vehicle worse than snow plowing. And, you know,
well, I would imagine that's why the pitman arm broke.
Right, exactly so. So would you do that?
And I didn't even touch the components of the, you know, the front end.
Right.
like the shocks and all that.
Right.
That's another story.
Well, so let's do this, Mike. Because let me do this and get you squared away, and then I can move on. Let's go talk to the dealer. Listen, I'm trying to form a relationship with you. This is what I want you to say to the guy, all right? Because now you're going to find out whether or not he's a human being. You with me? I'm trying to form a relationship with you guys. I'm trying to decide what, if any, repairs I'm going to do to my truck. Can I pay you for a safety checklist? I'm thinking it's up to an hour of your shop's time to look the vehicle over, come back to me with a report and some estimate to repair of what you think the truck needs now, and your best crystal ball explanation for the next 3 to 6 months, etc. And see what they say.
Okay.
And then we'll go
hey,
from
Ron?
There. Yes, sir.
My sister lives in Dumont, so I'm up there, you know, pretty often. I was wondering if we could do it in your shop.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, Mike. Right now, the backlog at my shop is probably 2 months out. I've got a long list, brother, and I got to tell you, I just don't do it here on radio. You'd have to call me.
We'd have, I understand.
You'd have to call me, and we'd have to talk about it. And the bigger concern is getting it there. You know, you're talking about a restoration. Well, you're talking about a restoration.
It
sounds like on an 01 Chevy. So,
say again.
You're talking about a restoration on an 01 Chevy that you're not exactly around the corner. I think the point of practicality is far from it. So give the dealer
okay.
a shot, man. You need somebody in your neighborhood.
But I love the truck.
No,
I love the truck.
I understand. By the way, can
you
I
tell
you? Hey, Mikey, can I tell you
I
something?
I got an emotional attachment to it.
Mikey, can I tell you something?
Yes.
Okay. And you know, I say this with love and respect, but for a guy that couldn't talk at the beginning, you're doing a great job. And I have to tell you something. I did lie to you. It's not just you and me. You're on 70-something affiliates all across America. So you have a good rest of the afternoon, Mikey, and thanks for being part of the Car Doctor family. 855-560-990. Well, you got to tell them that. It kind of calms everybody down, and you know. But good call. Mikey's full of beans. I like that. That's full of fire, right? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the end of the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Wayne in Virginia. Wayne, where are you in Virginia?
It's a town called Stanton, Virginia. We're right on the, if you look at a map and see where Interstate 81 that runs north and south and 64 that runs east and west, we're right at that intersection.
Are you near Virginia Beach?
No, that's about 3.5-4 hours away.
Oh, so you're yeah,
three
okay.
and a half, 4 hours east.
I'm trying to learn the layout of Virginia. They're bringing me down to. I haven't told Tom yet, so don't tell him. But they're bringing me down to Virginia Beach, because I was just made for suntanning. But they're gonna bring me
place.
Down there in November for the big annual car show. We're gonna do a broadcast from there.
I was there. I guess it's been. I was there at Christmas 2 years ago, and it was 80 degrees Christmas Day.
Ooh,
it was gorgeous.
Ooh, I'll have to bring my bathing suit. Anyway, what's going on with you today? What can I help you with?
My wife has a 2007 Accord, 2.4 four-cylinder, 112,000 miles, and we bought it new. And I've pretty much done all the maintenance on it, which it really hasn't required much. But probably 6-7 weeks ago, it started. Well, she started telling me that it would hesitate, and it never would shut off. But you'd go to hit the gas, and there would just be nothing there. You push the gas pedal further down, and you get it to downshift into overdrive, or you know, drops the gear, and then it will take back off. But it was just sporadic 6 weeks ago. I've driven it, excuse me, several times since, and. And it would, it would run fine for a few minutes, and you'd come to a stop sign, hit the gas, and it would be like the engine was starving for fuel, and you'd have to feather a little bit, and finally it would take off, and it would run like a bat out of heck, you know, for the next 5 or 10 minutes, and then it'd do it again.
Okay.
And it didn't seem to matter if it was hot or cold, or it didn't seem to matter as far as the attitude of the car in terms of uphill, downhill, that kind. So she has had a habit of running the thing into the fuel light coming on. She always runs near empty. And so my first thought was possibly a plugged fuel filter. Now, there were no computer codes at this point. So I thought it's a fuel filter possibly going bad or stopped. And then the Honda people say, well, no, there's no fuel filter on it.
Right.
There's
it's built into
spring,
the tank.
There's a suck.
Right.
And you
have
the pump. So I thought, well, gee whiz, maybe because she's run it low so much, the pump has overheated some and it's just going out. So I put a pump in.
Okay.
And that, didn't
fix it.
No.
Right.
No,
never
it ran
does.
Great for 105 miles. And start all over again.
And you thought, hot diggity. And then
and it started again.
Right.
So now at this point we started seeing one or two codes, one of which I don't have the paperwork in front of me.
2138.
Say that again.
Was it a 2138?
No, it was something. I'm thinking it was something about the O2 sensors either not seeing one or too lean or too rich.
Lean? Was it too lean? Was it a P0171?
That sounds right.
Okay.
But I got them both. I got one. There was ultimately at some point there was a reading on both the front O2 and the rear or the downstream O2 sensor,
okay,
which I had replaced both of those 4 or 5 months before.
Let me ask you something, Wayne. Do you have a scan tool?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a scan tool?
I do. I do. And that's where I'm getting the codes.
Can you read data stream?
Possibly, it's an inexpensive tool, and if it can, I don't know how. I'd have to educate myself.
Okay.
But
well, let me, in the meantime, go ahead.
In the meantime, I've gotten what possibly is the answer to this thing. I was pulling my hair out, so I went to the Honda store, and they wrote and they said, "Oh, you need this little device. It's kind of like this fly by wire thing, where there's no direct connection between the gas pedal and the throttle body."
Right, accelerator pedal position sensor.
Yeah, they said, "Oh, you need that." So they ordered one. I brought the car in, and something about it just didn't sound right. And I asked them. I said, "Please drive this thing before you start swapping parts." I said, "I've already swapped parts, and I'm not too successful at it." So he drove and he said, "No, that's not what's wrong with it." Then he gave me a list of things it could be. He said, "Give us the car for a whole day and let us try to figure it out." And then I could just see the meter running. So I said, "Well, let me see what I can come up with." Thankfully, they didn't charge me for the time they spent. But one of the things that they mentioned in the list was possibly the timing chain was bad. And I thought, gee whiz! At first I scoffed at the idea that how could a steel, a timing chain, not a belt, how could a chain cause this? But long story short, I wound up taking it to it. Now we've not fixed the car yet, but I went through as much as I drained all the fuel tank. I thought maybe there's bad gas, maybe there's water in it after all. So I got every drop of gas out of it, even wiped the son of a gun down with a rag on the inside. Put fresh gas in.
Yeah.
Didn't fix it.
So, I tell you what, Wayne, stop.
Go
stop,
ahead.
Stop, stop, stop,
go
stop.
Ahead.
Let me pull over, take a pause. When we come back, we're only going to have 2.5 minutes. So let me answer some questions and get you going before the end of the hour runs out. All right, brother? I'm Ron Anini and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Let's go over and talk to Wayne. Wayne, you're still there, brother. Wayne?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So let's do yes or no answers. So let me ask you this.
Okay.
We think this is setting a lean fuel condition fault code, correct?
Possibly.
Let's work with that, all right?
Okay.
When the dealer looked at this and drove it, okay, this is going to be more than a yes or no answer. Did they drive it? Did they experience the actual problem? That is a yes or no answer.
Yes, they did when they were preparing to put in this other part, and
okay,
the mechanic came back and said no.
Okay,
it's
so it's not that. Okay, so you've got a lean fault code, or so we think. All right, so let's work with that.
Now, I have another diagnosis if that'll help.
Go ahead, real quick.
Another local mechanic has said, long story short, he said your timing chain is stretched.
Okay, on the basis of what?
He put his snap-on scan tool on, and he spent some time, I guess, looking at the data stream, and he had seen this once before, or maybe a couple times before, to where you try to give it gas, and it's just like there's just no fuel. And then it comes back, then it goes away, then it comes back, but it doesn't generate any codes because there's not a sensor involved, except the sensor is reading the end result of this. Where the valves are not open and closing as they're supposed to, given the other operating conditions of the engine.
Okay.
That's what he says, and we're preparing to drop it off this week, this Tuesday, and he's going to take the measurements and then go from there.
Okay, listen, I respect everybody's diagnosis. If he's looking at the numbers and he's saying timing chain, then you got to go with that. All right. The question you got to ask him before you spend the money is, will this fix the car? The one thing I want to point out is somebody's hopefully been looking at fuel trim. There's a bunch of things to consider if it is a lean fuel condition. I'm not saying a chain's not it, but there are other things to look at. Let's look at them first before we spend money on a chain. I'm Ron Anian, the car doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. Now we're